The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network. I want to mention a great resource for writers, and this month's sponsor, Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories. I'll expound later in the show, but the short version is this long-awaited book about the craft of creative writing from New York Times bestselling author Steve Almond sets out to debunk the well-meaning but misguided myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and most honest work. Pick up a copy today of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, wherever you buy books, more soon. Greetings, scribes. I have got some exciting news to share. The Writer Files now has an exclusive Patreon community where subscribers will get exclusive access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and content from productivity and publishing experts each month. In the meantime, just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles. It's free to join Patreon to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something special.
It was a busy job. I was always on the road, so wasn't able to go to the theater as much as I wanted. And so I filled the time with reading instead. I was reading more. And in particular, I realized I was reading crime fiction. I was reading spy fiction. I was reading all of that, you know, great Cold War espionage stuff, all of the action adventure stuff, loving it. Until one day I read this book, and it started out absolutely magnificently. You know, the kind of book that you will miss your stop on the bus or the train because you're so absorbed by it. You'll stay up all night and be unable to go to work the next day because you just couldn't put it down. That's how it started. But the end was an enormous disappointment. Couldn't understand how the author, he seemed to have set up so many amazing possibilities, but then not followed them through. And I was thinking to myself, why didn't he do, you know, why didn't he follow up on this character? Why didn't he explore that scenario? You know, all of these things in my mind, and they became like an itch that I had to scratch. I had to find out, could I do it? Could I do it myself?
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am still your grateful host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. Number one New York Times bestselling author Andrew Child spoke to me about his lifelong obsession with storytelling, working with Jack Reacher co-author and brother Lee Child, and their latest in the series, The Secret. In addition to four Reacher novels, Andrew Child, the pen name of author Andrew Grant, has also written his own hit thriller series, including Run, False Positive, False Friend, False Witness, Invisible, and Too Close to Home. His brother Lee is the creator of the international best-selling, award-winning 28-book series of Jack Reacher novels and winner of Author of the Year at the 2019 British Book Awards. NPR said of the books, "The Reacher novels are easily the best thriller series going." And James Patterson said of the brothers' collaboration, "Two Childs are better than one." In this file, Andrew and I discussed his past lives in theater in the corporate world, the two saddest words in the English language, what it was like being a beta reader for Lee's early Reacher novels, the evolution of the Child Brothers' low-tech writing process, how to outright self-doubt, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. All right, we are back on The Writer Files. I am honored today to be joined by an esteemed guest. I've got New York Times bestselling author Andrew Child is hanging out with us, and I can't wait to talk about all the things. What is going on over there? Are you in the States presently?
Hi, Keltonite. And first of all, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's an absolute pleasure to get to talk. And yeah, right now I am in the States. I'm at home in Wyoming, and we're having beautiful weather right now. We're just at that point where we're tipping over from summer into the fall. So still bright and sunny, but the temperatures are dropping and the leaves are changing. So very, very beautiful outside.
Lovely. Yeah. What part of Wyoming are you in?
We are in southeast Wyoming. The nearest place to us is Laramie. But essentially, we live in the middle of nowhere. So it's a wonderful place to live, particularly when, you know, we both are writers. We both work from home. So it's amazing. No distractions, nothing to get in our way. And in fact, the moose and the elk and the deer, they come right up to the house. But if we want to find people, we have to get in the car and drive and look for them. So it's the complete opposite to living in the city.
Amazing, amazing. Well, that sounds like an idyllic writerly place to be. So talk a little bit. So this is interesting. Your wife is also a novelist, and that's got to be kind of interesting, because I know, you know, I talk to a lot of writers who, you know, have that same like 5-foot commute and work from home, and talk about kind of, again, those challenges of kind of like living in solitary confinement for your job. But it must be interesting having a spouse who is also a writer. How do you stay sane and not get in each other's way?
Well, you know, I think it's for us, it's turned out to be a huge benefit that we both do the same thing, because, you know, let's face it, being a writer isn't the most sensible way that you can make a living. You spend the whole time in your pajamas making up stories in your head. And, you know, I had a friend in England who's a playwright, and you know, he'd get up in the morning all frustrated because his play wasn't working the way he wanted it to be. And he'd kind of throw himself down on the couch, and his wife would be getting the kids ready for school and taking them to school and doing her own job and then picking the kids up at the end of the day and bringing them home and having to cook dinner. And he'd still be lying on the couch talking about what a terrible day he'd had, you know, and she was ready to stab him. You know, so say, you know, I'll show you what a terrible day looks like. But, you know, we get it. We get that sense of frustration that catches up with you sometimes. And we understand what it's like when you're at that kind of beginning phase of a book. And if you try to describe it, you sound like you're completely out of your mind, because you're saying, oh, yeah, I've got this great idea. You know, there's this guy and he does this thing in this place. You know, you sound nuts. So we, you know, we get it when you're at that stage. And then as you're going through the process and, you know, you work through those inevitable frustrating periods, and you get to the end when you just get complete tunnel vision and the pizza boxes are piling up and the dishes go unwashed, you know, we know what that's all about. And so we can really support each other through that. And as well as that, we can be the first people to read each other's stuff, because when you've been working on it for a year, you know what it's like. You're so close to it, you kind of lose perspective. And it's really helpful to have someone that you can absolutely trust to read it and tell you if it's okay, if you're safe to send it in to your editors, or, you know, if it's time to change your name and leave the country. So it's it's really good for us. It really works well.
Amazing, amazing. Well, I understand you weren't always a best-selling author, and you ran a small independent theater company in an earlier incarnation. Talk a little bit about, yeah, kind of this path to best-selling author, of course, working with your brother Lee on the Jack Reacher series. Yeah, kind of this winding path to where you are today.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great expression, a winding path, because that's absolutely what it was, you know. It certainly wasn't a kind of convenient or simple, straight progression. And I think that the key to it, and the theater thing really is part of this, is that I'm not one of those people who set out from childhood, you know, and always knowing they wanted to be a writer. You know, I don't have a closet full of handwritten books I made when I was small. I never had it in mind that I was going to be a writer. But looking back, I've just always been completely obsessed with telling stories. I just, even as a little kid, anything that I came across, anything that I saw, anything that happened to me, anything I did, you know, whether I was supposed to do it or not, that always formed the basis of a story. when I got to university, I started out doing English literature, because in the UK, it's a little different. You don't apply to university and then have a couple of years to figure out what you want to major in. You have to apply for the subject that you want to study. And for me, it turned out English literature was a bit of a mistake, because I'd loved it at high school, because the teachers were amazing and they let you could come up with any theory you wanted about any book or play or poem, as long as you could justify it. So it became this really fantastic kind of intellectual challenge. You know, you come up with a new interpretation and you then have to defend it. I loved doing that. But at university, it was different, because the professors were all these internationally famous people in their field, you know, and they saw any different interpretation as a challenge, you know, almost a sign of disrespect. And so the arguments became very negative, and I wound up getting kicked out of a couple of the classes. And so I really wanted to change to something else. But the only way to do that back then was to drop out and come back the following year. And you know, that would have, to my father, that would have felt too much like giving up. And that was something that you were simply not allowed to do. So the best I could do was switch so that it was half English and half drama. And I just loved the drama, because you had a completely blank page. A lot of you studied some of the theory, some of the practical stuff, but then a lot of the assessments were about, you wrote the play, you acted in the play, you had to do the lighting, the sound, the costume, the set, everything. And I just loved doing that. But like a lot of things, if you do it as part of an assessment, every time you've done the exam, you have to move on to the next part of the curriculum. And you might not be ready to move on. You know, you might think there's still material here that I want to explore. And five of my friends felt the same way. So the six of us together, we thought, before you get bogged down in the 9-to-5 and the mortgage and all of that, let's form our own company, and then we can explore everything that we felt we scratched the surface of, but were never able to take all the way. And so we did that for about 2 years. We thought we'd be able to get everything done in 1 year, but you know, life gets in the way, and it actually took two. But it was a fantastic time. We wrote all our own material. We toured the country. We went to the Edinburgh Festival. We had a wonderful, wonderful time. But at the end of it, we were broke. So it was time to do something else.
Earlier in the show, I mentioned an invaluable resource for writers. Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories based on 3 decades of writing, failing, and trying again. Author Steve Almond is a beloved professor at Harvard and Wesleyan and the acclaimed New York Times bestseller of 12 books of fiction and nonfiction. And in Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, Steve employs the radical empathy he displayed as a co-host of the Dear Sugars podcast with Cheryl Strayed, where they explored the joys and trials of storytelling to explode myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and truest work. The book includes chapters on plot, character, and chronology, but travels far beyond the earnest intentions of most craft books. It also includes writing prompts to generate new work. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Russo called it one of the best books on writing he's ever read, and also the funniest. Pick up a copy of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories, wherever you buy books, and add it to your TBR today. And just a quick aside to revisit the exclusive Writer Files Patreon community, where subscribers get access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and a lot more. I know that for serious writers, it can be more distracting than ever to cut through the noise, stay productive, and home in on what's happening in the publishing industry. Over 8 years, we've provided a looking glass into the habits of professional writers and publishing industry insiders. And as your humble host, I've decided to launch a membership-based Patreon for serious scribes to cut through the noise, swap tips and tricks, and hang out with like-minded peers. Just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles for bonus writing resources, monthly episode breakdowns, writer's happy hour, a community of your peers, ad-free episodes, and more. It's free to join, to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something cool and special. Keep calm and write on.
Yeah,
Yeah. So talk about the kind of your journey to finding fiction and then the novel, now to working with Lee and what that has, kind of felt or looked like for you.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. And I think that the part, the thing that connected the dots from the theater company to becoming a novelist was the time I spent in the corporate world, because what normal theater companies do is they'll alternate between established, well-known works, Shakespeare or something by another well-known author that will bring plenty of people into the theater, and then the money they make from those productions will subsidize the new experimental stuff. But we were only doing experimental stuff. So we were a tiny theater company that no one had ever heard of, doing plays that no one had ever heard of. So you can imagine financially it was a challenge. And so at the end of it, I just thought, okay, I need to fix the hole in my bank account. So and this is pre-internet. So if you wanted to get a graduate job in those days, you had to buy a copy of the Sunday Times and look at the employment section. So I bought one, and I cut out all of the job adverts that I thought I was qualified for, and I lined them up. It was very scientific. I lined them up in order of which had the biggest starting salary, since it was entirely, I was only doing it for the money. And amazingly, I got the job that offered the most money, so that was great, because I thought I'd be able to get back on an even keel quickly and get out. But a lot of these things go, I got trapped in there. The mortgage got me, everything else trapped me in there, and so it was a busy job. I was always on the road, so wasn't able to go to the theater as much as I wanted. And so I filled the time with reading instead. I was reading more. And in particular, I realized I was reading crime fiction. I was reading spy fiction. I was reading all of that, great Cold War espionage stuff, all of the action adventure stuff, loving it. Until one day I read this book, and it started out absolutely magnificently. The kind of book that you will miss your stop on the bus or the train because you're so absorbed by it. You'll stay up all night and be unable to go to work the next day because you just couldn't put it down. That's how it started. But the end was an enormous disappointment. Couldn't understand how the author, he seemed to have set up so many amazing possibilities, but then not followed them through. And I was thinking to myself, why didn't he follow up on this character? Why didn't he explore that scenario? All of these things in my mind, and they became like an itch that I had to scratch. I had to find out, could I do it? Could I do it myself? And so I tried for a couple of years maybe, to write kind of in the evenings and do my day job in the day. It just didn't work for me. I couldn't get the momentum going. So eventually I had to decide either to forget about the idea or to give up my it was a stupid move, give up my well-paying, secure, stable job in order to find out if I could do it. But somebody said to me, the two saddest words in the English language are "what if." And I just thought, I don't want to get to the end of a career, but be looking back and thinking, well, what if I tried to do the thing that I wanted to do? So I just thought, right, I'm just going to do it. I quit. I managed to get enough severance money to last for a year. And I thought, I've got that year to show whether I can do this job or not. And, fortunately that worked out. I was able to get a contract for the first book that I wrote, and, went on and wrote a few more under my real name, which is Andrew Grant. And then that led to the collaboration with Lee.
Amazing. Well, of course, the iconic Jack Reacher series now, I believe the latest is 26, or is it 25?
Oh, the latest one. Let me think. 25, 26. It's 28 is the one that's coming out.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Very cool. All right. So 28 is the number. Washington Post called Reacher one of this century's most original tantalizing pop fiction heroes. NPR called the novels easily the best thriller series going. And James Patterson said, two childs are better than one. What is it like working with your brother?
I mean, that is the big question, because it was actually a a real live question for both of us, because neither of us had ever worked with anybody this closely before. And, you know, Lee in particular always felt that novel writing, it was critical to have a clear, distinctive individual voice. And so it was a mystery to us, you know, how are we going to do it? So we figured it out initially back in the later, you know, the closing period of 2019. And then, of course, start of 2020, the pandemic hit. And so we had to reinvent how we were doing it. So we had to work out how to do it twice. And it's just been the best fun, because you know, it's a dream come true. I have to pinch myself. You know, I'm getting to do the job that I love doing, and I get to do it with my brother. It's been amazing. And, you know, a lot of times people are pressing us, you know, about, well, do you fight all the time? Do you argue? Do you squabble? And we really haven't. We really haven't, because we are very, very similar people. The same things make us laugh. The same things make us mad. If you looked at our bookshelves, you'd see that we have huge number of books in common. It's the same with music, same with other hobbies. And so we are very similar. We think in the same way. We react to things in the same way. And, you know, I was the first person in the world to read a Reacher book. You know, when Lee had got laid off from his job, he'd been fired, he had no money, he had to make it work. And so he sent me the manuscript, and I was terrified. I've never been more worried about reading a book in my life, because I knew how important it was to him. You know, he had to put food on the table, he had to pay his mortgage. And if this book was terrible, I was the one who was going to have to tell him. And then I was going to have to figure out, well, what happens next? Does he have to come and sleep in my spare room? You know, do I have to send him food parcels? So I was so worried reading that book, Killing Floor. But of course, I had nothing to worry about. It was brilliant. And it, you know, it led to the Reacher series taking off. And so I was so familiar with Reacher as a character, because I remember reading that book. And, if you think about how that book opens, first person with Reacher getting arrested and going to the police station, it takes ages before Reacher actually states his name. And part of that was because Lee hadn't decided on the name yet when he started writing it. But I remember reading it and thinking, you know, I don't know the character's name, but I know this character. You know, it was coming from Lee's subconscious, and it was same for me. And so over the years, you know, nearly a quarter of a century between Killing Floor and Lee asking me to join him. And during that time, we would sit together. Anytime we were hanging out, we would laugh and joke and talk about, well, what would Reacher do about this? What would Reacher think about that? It was like he was an imaginary extra brother, you know, there in the room with us. So amazing. I was super familiar with Reacher and how Reacher would respond to things. So I think that was a real help when it came to working together, because it wasn't like he had to sit down and explain what Reacher was. I knew that. And so it was really just a question of how do we, knowing what we know about Reacher, how do we come up with the stories and how do we get that down on paper? So, you know, a lot of the work was done for us because of that shared experience. It was, and shared DNA. It was really just the logistics of turning the kind of the daydreaming part into the finished product with words on the page.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, let's talk about the logistics, if you can. So obviously, you're working on different continents, I believe, at least part of the time.
Not always part of the time, but a lot of the time we are together in the States. When we started out, because he has a house about 3 miles from me, so he could just pop over any time. Post-pandemic, we stopped because we were trying to be conscientious about the whole not spreading the disease. And so we started working independently, remotely. And that actually surprisingly turned into a benefit. It was less fun because obviously hanging out in the same room with your brother and deciding what happens next in the story is huge fun. But what we found was that if we'd been talking in the day, daydreaming, fleshing out the next part of the story, and then say I put it down on paper in the evening and he came back the next day, that you just can't help but kind of explain it in advance. You can't help but say, this is what I've done, this is why, this is how it connects to what we did the day before, this is where it's going, this is what I think's important about it. Can't help doing that. And then when the other person reads it, they can't unhear that explanation. And so the words on the page aren't really doing all the work like they have to if somebody buys the book or borrows it from the library. So it wasn't really realistic. But once we were doing it separately and then emailing it back and forth, that's all you had, the words on the page, just like the reader has. And it became clear much more quickly whether that part was good enough or whether it needed more work. So it made the process less fun, but more efficient. And so we have continued using that method, even though now we physically could get together if we wanted to. We just feel if you've got a system that works, why mess with it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's pretty fascinating. Talk a little bit about, as you're, again, as you've said, emailing, what software are you using? So you're not using Google Docs where you can kind of comment on the work. How are you incorporating your brother's notes into your day-to-day?
I know there are all kinds of systems out there that are meant for, designed for collaboration. But, Lee is you might have noticed in some of the later Reachers that he wrote on his own, how Reacher was kind of falling behind in terms of the technology and not being super up to date. Well, that is very much Lee. He will use things that work. And if he's got something that works, he's in no hurry to throw it away and find something else. So from day one, he was using Word, and so we're still using Word. So and the thing with Word is it just works. There are things about it that can be irritating, but ultimately it's pretty effective. So we just use Word. We build on the master document, just making it longer and longer and longer, and then we talk on the phone, or if he's around, we talk in person, and then I'll make any changes to the document that come out of that discussion. So there's nothing high tech or fancy, no cloud sharing stuff, not even track changes. Track changes come into play once we send it to our editors, and it's very useful from that point of view, because we have an editor in New York and an editor in London. And so we can use between us track changes very effectively to keep everybody's suggestions and notes on track. But, Lee's not a fan of track changes. So that kind of managing the document kind of falls on me to do. But, we've really got it, the process dialed in at the, after we've done four together, so we've got that working pretty smoothly now.
Yeah, congrats. That's a very cool story, and it sounds like you guys have got your system down, even though Lee may be a bit of a Luddite.
Exactly. So I do most of the actual typing, because it's a lot quicker that way.
Well, congrats on the latest. The Secret, of course, as you said, is the 28th gripping new thriller from the number one New York Times bestselling authors, Lee and Andrew Child. Yeah, talk a little bit about, I know we have limited time, but I'd love to hear just a little bit about the origin or the inspiration, that went into the latest. And then, we'll just get kind of your final thoughts on how to keep going.
Well, thank you. Yeah, the the inspiration for The Secret, really two things. First thing was, now that in-person conferences have started up again, and you can do events where you can meet the readers. You know, that was horrible during COVID when that was all shut down. Talking to Reacher fans, we know that people really enjoy the prequels where Reacher was still in the army. People love that. And we hadn't done one of those together, so we thought it was time for another prequel. So that was in the back of our minds. And then a couple of years ago, independently, we'd come across a news story about how, mainly in Russia, but also in other parts of Europe, there were well-dressed, respectable, well-to-do businessmen mysteriously falling out of windows or falling downstairs or getting poisoned or falling off their yachts and drowning. You know, all of these deaths that no one could prove were murders, but, you know, didn't pass the smell test for anything else. So we thought, you know, that was just a fascinating scenario, these bodies hurtling out of windows and falling into the ocean and whatever. We thought, there's got to be a story here. So we started kicking that around, particularly in the context of the prequel, and deciding, well, how can we turn this into a story, and what will it have to do with Reacher? So we decided the way to go would be that somebody is murdering a group of people that initially seem unconnected, but it catches the attention of the Secretary of Defense because it seems like it might be tied into something that had been going on at the end of the 60s. So this book's set in 92, but it was a lot of the events that are referred to occurred in 69. So the Secretary of Defense calls for a task force to investigate. And so in any kind of bureaucratic setting, you don't know, is this because they actually want it solved, or is it because they're looking for a scapegoat if it doesn't get solved? So Reacher is brought in. He's recently, if for long-term readers, they'll remember that Reacher got busted down from major to captain at one point. So this is shortly after he's been busted. So he's still kind of out of favor. So he is tapped for this place on this task force. So he has to work with people from other agencies to try to figure out what's going on, who's behind it, and how to stop it. And so he's got to kind of navigate his way through a bit of a political minefield, as well as showing his investigative chops. You know, the one thing that we changed was that we thought it would be more fun, rather than be presented with all of these deaths as a kind of fait accompli, we thought it would be more fun if you see there are a couple of them have already occurred. So in the book, you see these murders taking place. You see what happens to the victims. And then you see Reacher, you know, surely and steadily homing in on the guilty party and making sure that justice is done.
Yeah. Well, congrats on the latest. Of course, I'll point at jackreacher.com. And where else do you like to connect with readers and listeners?
The best way, I feel, is through the in-person events, because it's great to talk to people and get their unguarded opinions, you know, find out what they really think and what they like, so that we can make sure to give them as much of what they like as possible. And that's my favorite. And then, of course, there are the ordinary, you know, the normal social media channels too. So, but in person is my favorite.
100%. And how can we learn about your upcoming tour schedule? Is that on the website?
It will be in due course. And also there will be details released mainly through Instagram, I think, is the main channel that they'll use. So keep an eye on the website or on social media, and the details will come through.
100%. I will link to all the things. The latest, of course, is The Secret. Congrats. And congrats on, I understand that there's going to be a second season of the Reacher streamer on Amazon. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah, that will be, airing in December. So not too much longer to wait.
Are y'all involved in any of that writing process, or
Lee is pretty well involved, because, you know, Lee worked in television before he got fired and became a writer. So, you know, TV is kind of in his blood. So I feel like, he kind of feels like he's come home, really, getting to be involved with the TV series. And, lessons were learned from the movies. And so I think they've been applied very, very effectively to the TV series. And what is great about the TV and what was impossible with the movie is just the sheer amount of time that's available as part of a streaming TV series. You got 7 or 8 episodes where you can explore every nuance, every step in the investigation. You can do the quiet parts as well as the loud parts. You can do the slow parts as well as the fast parts, which give it much more texture, much more context. So the TV, I think, is a perfect medium for dramatizing it. And I've got to say, I mean, I haven't been involved, but I think that they are doing a fantastic job, from the casting to the writing to the acting and the execution. It has been amazing. So I'm very excited for this second series to be available.
100%. I know we're at the half hour mark. You probably got to jump off. And one last pearl on just how to persevere as an author.
Yeah, that is a very good question because, even in Stephen King's famous book, On Writing, he talks about having to write quickly to outrun the self-doubt. And I think that ability to shut down those voices in your head that are questioning yourself, that is absolutely key. So the only thing that I can really offer to help with that is that you just got to remember what your job is, because even though you feel like writing is a solitary thing because you're at home on your own when you're doing it, really, you're part of a team. There are a lot of other people involved. And some of those other people, they're the ones who are going to decide whether what you're doing is okay or not. So your job is to start at the beginning and it is to keep going until you reach the end and stop trying to second guess, is what I'm doing any good or do I need to change it? Get to the end and then trust your editors, work with them, and then make the book as good as you possibly can. But don't feel like all that weight is on you. Your job is to start at the beginning and get to the end.
Amazing. Andrew, it has been a pleasure. Come back anytime. We appreciate your words and wisdom, and best of luck out there.
Well, thank you, Kelton. It's been a pleasure, and I would love to come back on the show. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.